on Tuesday nights. All we do is Sports Talk Atlanta. Tune in at 8 p.m. Eastern Time with hosts Travis McGee and Jamel Johnson. And, by the way, we talk HBCU first. Then we get you ready for all the sports news of the week around the world. We can't wait for you to stop by Never Had It So Good Sports Radio for the best sports show in America on Tuesday night. Let's go!
Good evening. This is Sports Talk Atlanta on the Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network and Radio. I am your host, Travis McGee, and I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Jamel Johnson. Jamel, how are you tonight, sir?
Hello?
Jamel Johnson, how are you tonight?
Yeah, it's just having you for some reason. But I'm doing great tonight, Travis. How are you?
I'm doing outstanding, Jamel. Every Tuesday night at 8 o'clock, Jamel, I get up for the show. I'm always excited, man, because of the sports world, because of the world, I guess you could say, United States of America and its sports. The sports in America, man, is like none other. And then you break it down to HBCU sports, man, which is the fabric of this country. Hey, man, it's always exciting. It's always something new. And with our special guest tonight, we're going to have a whole lot of fun with our special guest. Before we get into that, I want you to let all of our listeners know how they can follow us.
Yeah, so after the show or during the show, whenever you guys have time, you guys can head over to Instagram and you guys can follow us. We're called Sports Talk Atlanta over on Instagram, just straight Sports Talk Atlanta. And then on Twitter, we're Sports Talk AT01. And then on Facebook, we are Sports Talk Atlanta.
Man, I cannot wait to get into this show tonight because of the fact that we pride ourselves with content. We pride ourselves with getting it straight from the horse's mouth on laws, on things that are going on. Like one of the things that we found out today is that Atlanta's going to host the national championship in college football in 2025 at Mercedes-Benz Stadium. That news just came about today. So Atlanta and Georgia are still making big moves in this country when it comes to being number one, when it comes to facilities, when it comes to just national champions and national, I would say, I don't know, what do you want to say? What do you want to call it? National appearance of sports with our new stadiums, our new facilities, and like the man said, with bringing the national championship here, our hotels and the great people of Atlanta. Let's get right into our show. We pride ourselves with HBCU sports news and updates, and with our guest tonight, Ms. Deborah Rogers. She is Assistant Athletic Director, Compliance Officer at Morehouse College here in Atlanta, Georgia. Atlanta, Georgia houses two HBCU sports programs. That's Morehouse College, Atlanta University. First of all, let's welcome our special guest for tonight, Ms. Deborah Rogers. Ms. Rogers, how are you tonight, ma'am?
I'm doing great. How is everyone doing?
We're doing good.
I'm doing outstanding. Jamel?
Yeah, I'm doing great.
Okay. Ms. Rogers, first of all, I want to thank you for your time. I want to thank you for coming on our show to really not only have some fun, but to let our listeners know the things that go on behind the scenes that they don't see on a Saturday, that they don't see on a Sunday, that they don't see on a Thursday night in college football, not only in football, but in basketball, baseball, track, women's sports, all of the women's sports, horseback riding, whatever sport there is on a college campus. I think that you can let our listeners know, what things go on that they have to comply to in order to keep a program afloat. Am I correct?
That's right. That's correct. That's absolutely correct.
One thing I'd like for you to explain to me that I didn't go, it's not hard, but I, as assistant athletic director at Morehouse College and compliance officer, that's got to be, is that two jobs or is that one job in one, or do you wear many hats?
Well, I kind of wear many hats. It is a lot of jobs tied under one title. I actually do a lot of sport oversight as well. So along with compliance duties and oversight, I actually have some sport oversight duties, some administrative roles, and I actually sit in on a lot of meetings and things of that nature when my athletic director cannot be present and things of that nature. So there's a lot of hats to wear. However, I'm available to help and assist wherever I can. So it's interesting. Okay. Every day is different every day.
I can imagine. I can imagine. Let's start the show off real quick with my co-host. He's going to go ahead and ask you something, and then I'm going to take it from there. Jamel, go ahead.
Yeah, so hey, Ms. Deborah. Once again, I'm very excited on the show tonight. So, yeah, Travis filled me in on, you know, your position and everything. I kind of wanted to know basically the process of you getting into the position, kind of what made you interested in the field that you're in right now, and, you know, how exactly did you go about getting the position?
So, of course, many of us are in this field in the athletics world. We're normally also former student athletes. So I was a former student athlete at Fort Valley State University where I graduated. And I went into coaching right after I graduated high school, at Fort Valley at Miles College. And I was coaching women's basketball and volleyball for a few years. And our volleyball program, I became the head coach, I always knew I wanted to go over and switch over into athletic administration, but I never really knew when. I just knew that I wanted to. So while I was coaching, the volleyball program wasn't as successful starting out, you know, it was under new leadership or whatever. We were fairly new, just, you know, getting on our feet or whatever. So one day, I tell this story a lot because one day I walked into the office and my boss and the compliance administration at the time called me into their office. So I walked into the office and they were both sitting there and I was like, you all about to fire me, right? I know we're not winning. Like, just give me at least one more year. You know, they were like, no, we're not about to fire you. So when I sat down, they explained to me the transition that was about to happen. Our compliance administrator was about to go to another institution. And my athletic director at the time told me that he thought that I would be the best person for the job. I was eager to learn, willing to learn. We had a close relationship with the compliance administrator, so she used to teach me a lot of rules and regulations. So I sat back and I was like, wow, me? You know, because I wasn't at the time thinking about switching over right then. So it was kind of like the timing of it just kind of all fell into place. And I didn't learn it all within a month or a week or a year or whatever. It took time. And that was in 2012. So I've been in athletic administration ever since 2012. I was at Miles College for almost 10 years, and I transitioned over to Morehouse College. One day I received a phone call, and they asked me would I be interested in being an assistant athletic director for compliance, and here I am today.
Wow.
So I've been doing athletics compliance a little over quite a 10 years.
Okay, wow. So you're a veteran at this.
Yeah, I've met a lot of great people within the conference. I've worked with a lot of different people. I've had some amazing mentors, leaders, great bosses. So I've learned from a lot of great people.
Good stuff. Well, let me ask you this. What would make any college program or any sport step out of bounds as a program that we can see? It's a two-part question that we can see and one that we cannot see. I guess I'm saying, you know, as a compliance officer, I'm going to say you know everything because you have to report to the NCAA. So what do we see? What's a rule that we see that they cannot do as a sports program? And what are some that we cannot see, you know, whatever that might be, and I could say, oh, I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. So So one of the biggest violations that many people see on the outside is obviously recruiting. especially at the Division One level with our main face of our sports, the football and the basketball program. But honestly, the one rule that you all will more than likely hear about or read about in the public at this level is probably lack of institutional control. So there are a number of things that fall under lack of institutional control. Failure to monitor, improper certification of a student athlete, or financial aid equivalencies and limitations, or transcript tampering, things of that nature. And I say that you will probably see that more at this level is because normally at an HBCU or an institution, we don't often have the personnel to perform these job duties. So a lot of the NCAA rules and requirements are neglected and ignored, which results in major violations, such as lack of institutional control. So you're probably familiar with that, but that's one of the major violations that the public will see because there's so many things that fall within that we, as HBCUs, some campuses just don't have the personnel to monitor each area like that. So it's really like a collective teamwork effort that we all get from other departments on campus, the registrar, the financial aid, admissions office. So we all work as a team so that we don't fall within these major violations. It happens. We're not perfect. However, once we go through this whole major violation thing, we do what we can so we won't run into these violations again. Now, to name a few that you probably won't see or hear about that, you know, we often call, it's called secondary or level 3 violations. We all self-report our competition or practice prior to amateurism certification, or competition and practice while enrolled less than full time, or impermissible tryouts, or exceeding weekly hours of accountable athletic-related activities. Those are some of the violations that you won't see or hear in the public, or if you're not on the campus within our system, you may not know that goes on because those are self-reported. They're called secondary and level 3 violations, so they're not considered major. Some may result in monetary fines. It just depends on the level of the infraction, I would say. But the one that you will probably always see is those of lack of institutional control. And I'll tell you a story. At my previous institution before, the public, everyone knew about this one. It was with our basketball program, and we had a student athlete that competed in like 9 games while ineligible. So 9 games, that's very excessive. Normally 1 or 2 games here and there. We do have student athletes, and it's not like an intentional thing or anything like that, but 9 games is very excessive. Like, how can you mistakenly play a student athlete ineligible for 9 games? So that was one of our major violations that was open to the public. It was, you could just see it in a news article here and there. We were fined for each competition that the student athlete competed in and things of that nature. So those are very common at the HBCU level or at the Division II level.
Wow. 9 games is a lot of games.
Yeah, that's a lot of games to go, you know, unnoticed or say, hey, this was a mistake or anything like that. But I mean, it all depends on the level of the infraction.
Wow. And I'm still stuck on tampering.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. I have not experienced that, but it happens.
Right.
You know, we all are to act up, you know, with the level of integrity or whatever, but just being in this profession for quite some time now, I've done homework and I've pulled, I'm able to access the system where I can see some of these infractions on other campuses or whatever, that we get notification, and it happens.
Yeah. So if my program, we'll get into PWIs later, but if my program at HBCU mm-hmm. on the road and I get to fighting in the game,
mm-hmm.
That's part of lack of institutional.
No, I wouldn't consider that lack of institutional control. That would possibly be kind of on game day management. However, the institution can and possibly will be responsible for a fine that comes down from your actual conference office.
Okay.
You know, like we've had fights to break out of different institutions within our conference. So the conference actually renders those penalties or whatever sanctions that they take on, but depending on the games and who we played or whatever. So, yeah, those are not institutional control. That's kind of just like You know, hey, coaches control your team. So.
Right. Right. Well, yeah. I'm going to move right along. Are there any new compliance laws with COVID-19 that wasn't there before COVID, but they're there now?
Yeah, I think once we all knew when COVID hit in 2020, you know, everyone panicked, especially our high school student athletes, especially those that were graduating in May of 2020. You know, like, what does this mean for them? You know, because we had some high schools that went to virtual learning, a hybrid or whatever, then we had some schools that just did not ever reopen after COVID. They couldn't bounce back from it. So moving forward, those student athletes were not able to access academic records such as transcripts and proof of graduation. You know, they were found a minimum requirement for initial eligibility. So when COVID hit, yes, the NCAA did provide relief for those incoming student athletes for the 2021 year, the 21-22 year, the 22-23 year, and now the 23-24 year. And two of those reliefs that they provided was the 16 core units, a 2.2 GPA, and proof of high school graduation. Prior to COVID, you had to submit ACT and SAT scores for initial eligibility requirements. So they provided some. Mm-hmm. So that's, I mean, they're not saying that you don't have to take it anymore, but it's not required for those years that I just named for incoming student athletes.
Okay.
So that was one of the biggest reliefs that we were all able to see for incoming freshmen and incoming student athletes out of high school, just meeting those three requirements. Now, if you have taken those ACT or SAT courses or classes or tests, you can still submit that, but the NCAA does not require that at all. So after the completion of the 23-24 year, that's when they are starting back accepting ACT and SAT scores. So that was one of their biggest reliefs that we saw for COVID when COVID hit.
Ms. Rogers, I want to make sure that I heard you right, because that sounds, I mean, it's very, very good. Mm-hmm. Do not accept ACT or SAT scores?
Well, they're not required. They're not saying
that
they won't accept
because
you took. Yeah, they're not required. But some college institutions feel required. So that's why we don't tell the high school student athletes, don't take it, because you may enroll in an institution that may still require that.
Okay. Got
so, but the NCAA is just not using that as a requirement right now. The only three things is the 16 core units, the 2.2 or better GPA, and proof of high school graduation.
That's a good deal. That's a very good deal. Now,
mm-hmm.
A listening audience has parents that have high schoolers right now, because that's going to affect them for the next 2 years.
Absolutely.
And so I guess you could say a junior now in high school,
mm-hmm.
but if you're a sophomore now or freshman, you got to go back to the old room.
Right, right.
Oh, yeah, that's cooking right there. Mm-hmm. And that relieves a lot of pressure on everybody from a pandemic. You know?
Absolutely. Because they did take in consideration of that. Like right now, we're still, like, struggling with communicating with some high school counselors just to get some of that information that we need right now for initial eligibility. So
right.
If some institutions haven't completely recovered from COVID. So they have taken that into consideration with the NCAA.
Wow. Great information. Good to know. Well, what are some new compliance laws? I guess that was one of them.
Yeah, that was just with COVID. Yeah. So I think we're all familiar and have had lots of conversation about the transfer portal. So I think that was the biggest talk this year at the NCAA convention back in January. Several rules passed, but however, this one, you know, stuck out like a sore thumb because it actually placed a deadline for student athletes to enter the transfer portal at the Division I and the Division II level. The Division I deadline was May 1st, and the Division II deadline was June 15th. Now, what this did was provide the student athlete with more knowledge about the transfer process. They must now watch a video module to be sure that they understand the process. Institutions are no longer allowed to object to the one-time transfer rule. So it made the transfer process more student-athlete friendly while making sure that the student-athletes are making a sound decision. So yeah. That was one of the biggest rule changes that deadline day, because we had a lot of student athletes that panic, like, okay, well, let me hurry up and get in the portal. But it's only if you're seeking the one-time transfer exception that you would have to be in the portal by that deadline. So we get a lot of questions. Well, what happens if you enter the portal after the deadline? Well, that's where we are now. So we get these emails from the NCAA daily about these questions. So now us compliance administrators, we have to file waivers now for this. So every situation is different if this student athlete did not enter the portal by the deadline, because we got to now find out why. So that was one of the biggest new rule changes that came about this year.
Wow. So I guess you could say, okay, a senior that has graduated, he's going to get in there, you know, as soon as possible in the transfer portal, because he still probably has eligibility left. But if you're a sophomore and you don't like your program for whatever reason, it doesn't matter the reason, and you go into the transfer portal, and then at the end of your junior year, you want to go back into the transfer portal, you can't do that, can you?
Yes, you can be withdrawn from the portal at any moment if the student athlete indicates just feel like that they no longer want to transfer. They can come to myself or whomever the compliance administrator is at that institution and let them know, I want to be withdrawn from the portal. I mean, we see it all the time. So and basically,
so
the portal only – yeah. Mm-hmm.
They can do it twice?
I mean, yeah. As long as they have eligibility remaining, just because they entered the portal doesn't mean that you actually transfer.
Okay.
So I can enter the portal, but if I don't transfer, hey, I have not used any type of, you know, transfer exception or anything like that. What I did was basically put my name out there in a pool of student athletes to allow other coaches from other institutions to communicate with me. That's all I did.
Okay. Sounds good. Sounds good. Well, my last thing is, do you think HBCUs have different compliance laws than PWIs?
No, they don't. The names are different, PWI, HBCU, but the answer to that is really no. PWIs and HBCUs are all governed under the same NCAA Division I, II, or III rules and legislation.
Okay.
Now, this, I'm not sure if you're familiar with the Academic Performance Program. This is also known as the APP program that we all must adhere to that the NCAA has. So this is a program that requires college teams to hit a certain academic benchmark. So if a team comes up short, the punishment can range all the way from having practice time cut or to a ban on the postseason play or something like that. So the benchmarks are based on the team's grade, eligibility, and whether they're graduating or staying at school. Okay? So this puts our HBCUs at a disadvantage, because HBCUs' missions have always been to enroll low-income, first-generation, and pretty much at-risk students. So now they are already starting at a lower graduation rate and success rate when they enter college, lower academic progress rate, but yet we're still being held to the same benchmark as PWIs, who don't have the same missions as HBCUs. So the argument with that is that the NCAA should be supporting the missions of the HBCUs rather than penalizing us for them. So this report that is due for all NCAA institutions, the argument comes into play because HBCUs are actually being penalized for this report rather than the NCAA supporting us. So the rules aren't different. We all have to do the same report. But just because we have different mission statements than PWIs, seems like we're being penalized. That's just an argument that's out there with it. So just to answer your question, no, the rules aren't different. But we do have, our success rate and graduation rates may differ from the PWIs because of what our mission statements are. So.
Yeah. Well, having said that, and you've been in this career 10 plus years, am I correct?
Yes, that's correct.
my next thing is, and it's not, but my next thing is, you've seen a lot, okay? Mm-hmm. Then all of us, this is something that I ask most, well, I've had all the commissioner, SBC commissioners on my show. Mm-hmm. And this is what I've asked all of them. What about NIL that has come about, which is a very good thing? Very, very good. And you used to be an athlete, and I used to be an athlete. So what if NILs were around when I was, you know, playing or you were playing?
Absolutely. But
my thing is, since you've seen no NIL, and then all of a sudden now we have NIL, what do you think about, you know, just a generalization of it with compliance? That's what I want to say.
When it first came about, of course, myself and along with my other compliance administrator colleagues or whatever, we all like, okay, so this creates more work for us. I mean, really, when you think about it, I mean, that, being honest, it creates more work for us because we are the ones that's actually implementing and enforcing and, you know, that and educating. However, we have relied on these outside sources and agencies to come in on our campus to deal with that because we are just not in that area.
Okay.
Yes, it does create more work for us because we still have to monitor. We still have to implement. I'm meeting with student-athletes pretty much every day, and one of the topics that I end with is NIL, and one of the things I let them know, I'm not an expert in that area. However, research says, because of some of the NLI sports agencies, companies that I have spoken with, that we're running into the biggest problem is the student athletes are not disclosing their deals with us. And it's happening on our smaller campuses because the deals that they are getting are not as large as the ones that we see at the Division I level or PWIs. And all my SWAC schools, they have large NIL deals and endorsements. So, you know, that's great. But at our level, what we see here within the SIAC, we don't see much of it. So we have to dig deep, you know, and ask these student athletes to disclose this information with us because we don't want to jeopardize their eligibility based off them not having the knowledge and being educated on it. So, I mean, I'm not against it.
Right.
But at the end of the day, like I say, it creates more work for us, but it's all about our student athletes at the end of the day.
Yeah, exactly. So by them not getting the large deals like at a Division I PWI, they'd rather just keep it a secret. But you all have to come and pry it out of them and then explain why they have to say, hey, you have to tell me, man, or young lady, what you're getting, because in order for you to survive in the sports world and collegiate play, we have to know how much you're getting.
Absolutely, because it comes in, you still have to think about the tax part of it, financial literacy, whether you are actually utilizing someone else's logo or something. Now, if you're using Morehouse's logo, we got to take more. We got to pay Morehouse now. They may charge a fee. Like, we have to take into laws and consideration with that. So that's why we're like, trying for them to tell us, because they think maybe just because I'm only getting $500 or $1,000, that's not much. So I'm good. I'm not telling. But we have student athletes that do disclose. But for the ones that is not sure, because I do talk with some student athletes, that they're just afraid to accept whatever offer that has been also to them, they're afraid because they just don't know. Like, what all, and that's when I step in and say, hey, give them my info, and I can take it from there and communicate with them. Hey, what is that? What does this contract entail? How much is he's being offered, he or she is being offered, or whatever, taxes and things of that nature. So we do have some student athletes that disclose, and we have some that don't. So, and like I said, that's up to us, and with the help of coaches, they also, you know, help us out with that too, with disclosing, hey, this student athlete has a deal here or there, something like that. So, I mean, it's a team effort, but we'll get there.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just, like you said, it's more work, and I'm sure when that came up, I'm sure when that came about, it you probably said to yourself, "That's all we need is more work."
Yep. More work. More work. What would I not be every day if we didn't have as much work?
Right. Oh, God.
But it's fun. It's fun learning about these new deals and exciting for the student athletes when they have these deals, because you want to see our student athletes, you know, excel and be successful in other areas. So.
Wow. Good stuff. Good stuff. I learned something tonight, and you know how you know something, but you didn't know how to put it in words. That was something that I also learned, and it looked like you did a great job. Another thing too, the institutions that you went to, and the institution that you played for, and the institutions that you worked for, all were, I guess you could say, you know, boys and girls, men and women.
Men and women.
Working at an institution with the all males. Is that something different for you, or I'm not saying nothing.
It does. Right. I understand. Absolutely. That was one of the things that I was eager to tackle when I got to Morehouse, because the previous institutions that I attended and worked for, they were male and female, and this was my first time having to work at an all male institution. So I was excited to learn, you know, I had to get used to it, because the language that we use every day, I'm used to male and female, women's basketball, men's, but you know, that. So with all male school, you don't have to do that because it's an all male institution. However, my expectations were, it was everything that I thought it would be. It was different. I thought I was not going to see as many women, because a lot of people asked me, they were like, so do women? I was like, yes, women that work at Morehouse. It's just an all-male undergraduate institution. So that was the main thing. A lot of people, we didn't know that we were going to see as many women as we did on campus. But we have women throughout the campus. That's
of course. Yeah. I mean, but, you know, as far as seeing males all the time,
yeah,
and Morehouse,
right.
Morehouse doesn't have a women's basketball team and a women's track and a women's golf.
Right.
And, you know, it's
and
all
we do
just,
have, yes, and we do, our cheerleaders, they are students of Spelman College, so they interact and they cheer for all of our sports programs. So we do, it's kind of like, you know, a lot of people say, they're enrolled at Spelman, that's our sister institution. So, we do get a lot of female interaction as well. So,
well, I'm glad you said that. Since you said that, does the cheerleaders coming from another institution, because this is a unique situation, coming from another institution, are they? Do you have to do compliance for them also?
No. In our situation right now at our institution, cheerleader is housed on our athletics program. However, they're not an NCAA sponsored sport. So they do not have to comply with NCAA rules or things of that nature. So no, I don't educate them on rules and things like that, like I do with my other sports teams. However, they're still held to an academic standard by their head coach, their department head. They're still required to have a certain GPA and things of that nature. They're just not appeal to the actual NCAA rules and eligibility that other student athletes have to follow.
Wow. So cheerleading, let's say at another institution, that would it be considered a NCAA supported sport?
If that institution sponsors that. So, and just say for instance, when I was at Miles College, cheerleading, you know, we had male and female sports. However, cheerleading did fall under athletics at one point, but they're not an NCAA-sponsored sport. So if our institution or our conference doesn't sponsor that as a sport, then, you know, we don't have to take it on under our umbrella as a sport as well. So it's all up to the conference. And there are conferences that sponsor that, because I see it in the system, cheerleading, like that's actually a sport, but we don't sponsor it as an NCAA sport.
Okay. But would you, off the top of your head, would you say the SEC maybe, or maybe the SWAC, or maybe the Big Ten, or maybe the Pac-12, they might, really it might be a sponsor sport, am I correct?
I'm not comfortable with saying that it is. I know that when I'm in the system doing our sports rollover or sports sponsorship or whatever, I do see that cheerleading is one of the options to select. So I know that it is there. I'm just not sure which conferences or which institutions actually sponsor it as a sport. And that's a great question. So now I actually look and try to find that information because I'm curious to know as well. So thank you for that.
Hopefully we all learn something here at Sports Talk Atlanta. That's why we're here. But, you know, I was just curious anyway. And Spelman doesn't have a sports program. So they had one, then it went away. I really wish that it would come back. Golf.
And they actually had a great sports program. I know when I played at Fort Valley my freshman year, we actually used to come on Spelman's campus to play.
Hopefully
we can see that maybe in the future.
Because I'm just going to say it, Spelman's got a tremendous boatload of money because they don't have sports programs.
Right.
They don't have any. They don't spend not $1 on sports. Wow.
None.
You're talking about rich.
You can imagine. Absolutely. You can imagine the amount of money that they're saving and have over there.
Oh my God! My God, that is but that's great though. But you know, for HBCU, I applaud them. But I still want them to have sports because I still think that you can build leaders. You know, playing sports.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
we may see that. You know, Morris Brown is back open and back Chris Union. So we may see that from another one of our AUC. Institution.
It would be great to bring Morris Brown all the way back because that would have three sports programs in Atlanta,
right?
Like it was when I was playing. You know, you had Morris Brown Park and you had Morehouse, and they all three played each other. You know, in any sport that was available, and that was great. Because Morris Brown has a stadium that's sitting there, that's just sitting there.
Wow, I've never seen it.
Play in that stadium. It sits right there by the MARTA station, right there by the train station. I mean, it's just sitting there, deteriorating. And, you know, there's a lot that could go on at that stadium. We could have Division II, a Celebration Bowl. Games there, you know, big games, bring in somebody from California, New York, Florida, and play some games there, you know, at that stadium. And then all its Division II games, Bowie State versus, I don't know, you know, Edward Waters in a special game in Atlanta or, you know, just sitting there. So I'm hoping that Morris Brown comes back, get their stadium back, builds a baseball stadium. They had a nice gym right there. You know, just bring it back. Like it was. That's what I'm hoping.
Right.
Yeah. And with you being the compliance officer, like I said, I know you've seen a lot. I know you learn a lot and see a lot on a daily basis that, you know, that we don't see. And that's why I wanted to bring you on and let our listening audience really listen. Not only the listening audience, but parents of the students that are in school right now.
Right.
Let them know what's going on.
Right. And I really do appreciate you having me on so that I can share some of this information. Because a lot of parents, high school counselors, coaches, a lot of them, they just are not aware of it or whatever. So this was a great opportunity, and I hope some of our listeners actually learned something new as well with this today. So.
Yes. Jamel, do you have anything?
No, she went over everything. You know, I'm very excited. I was able to hear and learn a lot tonight, just like, you know, how I hope a lot of other people listening learned a lot tonight. You know, I was very wondering, you know, what the position was and what it did. I knew you threw me in a little bit earlier. But, you know, hearing her go over everything and learn about all the new things that are going on as well, you know, is very exciting to hear.
Thank you, Kimmel. Thank you.
You know, Miss Rogers, I'm still don't think I'm a violent person or anything like that. I'm on I'm a nonviolent person. But, you know, when you play sports, sometimes it can get a little chippy. Okay, the chippy can mm-hmm. sometimes it can get real into a fight. Sometimes the fight can get it to be more than, you know, what it was supposed to be. Well, my thing is, I've heard that once or twice of that lack of institutional control.
Mm-hmm.
But you explained it to me really good, you know, or explained it
yeah.
to us, listen to the audience, because now I know, you know, okay, yeah, it was a fight, yeah, but if it gets to be more than, you know, they're still fighting, and the referees told you, coach, you need to, you know, police up on your players, and they're still fighting, then it gets
right.
to the Yeah.
Very common on our campus. So yeah. So if they continue to fight, you like, okay, so now the coaches doesn't have control of their team. So it's pretty much the same with institution. You know? So it's considered lack of the institutional control. And we don't, many institutions, that is one thing that we do not want to experience. So no one wants to experience that.
And nobody wants to, and you know, you always want to play a fair game and things of
Absolutely.
That nature. Ms. Rogers, mm-hmm. I just want to thank you for your time and explaining everything to us. And I like I said, I learned a lot. Some of the things that you know, but you can't say in the word, and you just explained
mm-hmm.
it very well. Thank you.
Thank you so much. You're welcome. Thank you.
And it promise us this: if you ever learn something that you did not know, and you learn it, come on our show and share it with us.
I will. I mean, I'm sorry if it's so much. So if I begin to bother you and overwhelm you with these little things,
no.
I'm sorry, please. So.
No. Text us, email us, whatever, and say, hey, look, I think your listening audience needs to know this, you know.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, somebody out there in this nation, you know, needs to know the rule changes.
Right. I do want to share something if we have
Please
any parents that are listening or whatever, just to give them a few tips with their student enrolling or entering college. One thing is get organized, and I say that meaning a few things. Take the ACT or the SAT around your sports schedule. Meaning, if you have to take the ACT or the SAT, if you play softball, that's normally in high school a spring sport. So schedule those ACT and SAT dates in the fall. Meet with your guidance counselors throughout the year. Reason being, making sure that your high school courses meet NCAA requirements. This year has been the year that I've seen the most high schools that have not updated their core course list. And a lot of it has to do with COVID, when normally that's updated on a year-to-year basis because curriculums change and things of that nature, you know, so we take that into consideration. But make sure that you're meeting with, your student is meeting with their high school counselor pretty much on a, I would say, 2 to 3 times a semester just to make sure that they're up to date with that. Rely on the coaches and guidance counselors for guidance. You know, like these are the people that you interact with the most when you're in school. These are the ones that actually know some of these rules and regulations, your guidance counselors and your coaches. And the last thing is come up with social media accounts. What you post on social media says a lot about your character. So coaches, they look for that kind of stuff. So those few things, that's what I mean by get organized when you're preparing to go to college, whether it's at the Division I, II, or III level. Just get organized. Make sure that you're doing those few things. And that was one thing that I wanted to share if we had parents listening in.
Yes. That is great information. Thank you. Because, you know, like you said, get organized, man. Parents that are listening, you're getting it straight from the compliance officer at the college level. Because once it gets to you or the college or the, like you said, you all work as a team, registrar, financial aid, and the other
mm-hmm.
offices with college. And then if something's missing, now we got to start all over. But because you got to put that on, You got to put that on mm-hmm. hold, and all the is there, the high school, mm-hmm. and then you got to hope that they can talk to you. You know, so,
absolutely. It's a process. Yeah. It really is. It's a process, and it's a lot of steps to it. So that's why I said just try to be as organized as possible.
Yeah, I wanted to get to that real quick. Basically, you know, I graduated not too long ago in 2020, but, you know, you're talking to your counselors and everything and making sure everything is organized before you get to college. Mm-hmm. I know so many people that just did not take advantage of being mm-hmm. in the counselor, figuring out what they needed to do so that when they got to that college level, everything was straight. All they had to do was go to class,
right.
and you know, they were all – then once they got to college, they were just scrambling. I know so many people that happened to, and, you know, especially during COVID, the COVID year, it was so because around March and everything, when everything shut down, you know, you didn't really have access to your counselors like that, you know, online and everything. It was kind of just a lot going on. People were still trying to figure out everything that was going on. So that was really a time when a lot of people were just missing out on a lot of good information to get prepared for college and, you know, basically just get organized like feds. So I really like what you just said about, you know, getting organized, talking to your counselors. I mean, mm-hmm. I have a lot of recent experience in that as well. So,
mm-hmm. absolutely.
Yeah. I'm glad you brought that up, Jamel, because that is something that's real.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And it slows down the process of the college of processing the student athlete or student, just period.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it slows it down. Again, Ms. Mm-hmm. Rogers, I want to thank you for your time, for coming on our show. And again, if you run across something new, don't hesitate to tap us on the shoulder and say, hey, look, I'd like to let your listening audience know of something that's new that they might not have known.
Absolutely.
Again, I want to make it our mission at Sports Talk Atlanta that we engage our HBCUs that are in the Atlanta area more this year. We want to engage. We want to put,
mm-hmm.
Period. You know, we're tired of the Alabama, Georgias, and USCs, and the Floridas, and Ohio State, all of them getting all the attention. No, we're going to give you some attention.
Absolutely.
Give you a whole lot of-
Thank
give
you.
A
whole- Thank you.
Yeah. And we're going to make sure of that. Again, thank you. And if there's nothing else, I want to say have a great night and continue to do what you're doing, because compliance officers are vital, not needed, vital.
Yes.
You're vital. You have a vital.
They are.
So
yes, we are. Thank you so much. Thank you all for having me.
Yes. We're going to go to a commercial, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about the NFL. We're going to talk a little bit about the Falcons. And, hey, man, we got a guy from Atlanta, Georgia, that's with the Tennessee Titans at quarterback, man. He had a very good first game. We'll talk about that when we come back. This is Sports Talk Atlanta on the Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network and Radio. We'll be right back.
CampLineman.com is an opportunity for my big boys to come get some work. Let's put it all together. That we built from the ground up. You know, our cliche is it all starts up front. Once again, start, stance, hand placement, hand separation, get offs, counter moves, a little bit of everything. Polish up those skills before your middle school or high school season began. Just come work on your craft. Once again, CampLineman.com.
And we're back. This is Sports Talk Atlanta on the Never Had It So Good Sports Media Network and Radio. I am your host, Travis. I'm joined by my co-host, Jamel. We just had a great conversation with Morehouse College Compliance Officer and Assistant Athletic Director, Ms. Deborah Rogers. And she gave us a lot of information on compliance laws, because they have to report to the NCAA, not only on a daily basis, but, you know, every time something comes up, they have to report and let the NCAA know what's going on at all times. So we want to thank her for her time, and we just want to thank her for her insight. NFL has started, sir. Are you excited?
Man, I'm so excited. I don't even think excited is the word. This is my favorite time of the year. It's my favorite season. My favorite time of the year. I love football. I just love the NFL. And we're not going to have a week from from starting or yeah, starting from last week actually, we're not gonna have a week without college football or professional football up until February. So I'm very excited, man.
Good Lord. Can we say burnout? Can we say that? No, that's a lot of football. Because when you throw in high school and little league, I mean it's football almost daily because high school is every Friday night. You have some on Saturday night, but it's every Friday night. You got Friday night, Saturday night, Sunday. And then you got Sunday night football. Then you got Thursday night football. Oh, my God.
Monday.
Hey, man, the Falcons had a game this week. And what did you think about the Falcons pregame? You did like, what do you like? Real quick.
Yeah, so I really liked a lot of things that the Falcons did. They got a lot of good players. I feel like, you know, we saw a little bit of the quarterback battle with Marcus Mariota and Ridder. We talked about it last week a little bit. I do think Marcus Mariota should start starting out. He is a veteran. I think they should give him a chance to prove play. And then if he can't, you know, play, I feel like if he can't play, then it'll just be something to where the Falcons probably won't be that good anyway because, you know, quarterback is that person that basically the quarterback's playing bad. It's pretty kind of just a reflection of the team. So Marcus, he's probably going to set the tone depending on how he plays for the season. So that's a lot of weight on his shoulders. But I do think Ridder should get some type of just experience this season with probably getting a couple reps here and there. So that's that thing. I love the defense. I think the defense made a huge improvement from last year to this year with the acquisition that they got over there the offseason. But one aspect that's still very bad is just the O-line. The O-line is still just not in the place that it needs to be. Even on that first drive when the starters were in, and Marcus, he had to run. He had to get out of the pocket pretty much every possession, even though we have a mobile quarterback now. Marcus Mariota, he's very good with his legs. We saw that in Tennessee, and when he was with the Raiders, they would bring him in as, you know, like a decoy guy to run or whatever. But even though we have a mobile quarterback, imagine how much better we would be if we just had a solid line to give our quarterback some time to scan the field, you know, find the open guy. But I'm just glad we do have a mobile quarterback now so that, you know, you can get out the pocket and not just stand there like a, you know, sitting duck, you know, when the pocket collapses.
Hey, man, ditto to what you just said, man. I think last week to you and the listening audience about what the defensive coordinator said first after the first practice. He came on the news here in Atlanta, and he said, all of the other 31 teams think our defense is soft. They think we're just, you know, no good. We're going to try to change that this year. So what you said was your first thing. You liked the defense and how it looked at that time, which was the first, scrimmage game. I mean, first exhibition game.
Yeah.
I like that, man. Hey, man, it proves that he went to work, didn't he?
Yeah, he really did. Yeah, there was one play where I think his name is DeAndre Alford or something. I don't know. I guess they just got him. I don't know who he is, but he came in. He was playing such good defense, and he made a diving interception he made a play on the ball, and it was just I never even seen that before, really, from the Falcons. No, there's really a lot of the times the defense just doesn't have the effort, you know, when it comes to making plays on the ball, being able to break on the ball. The effort is not there. And when I saw that play, I was like, wow, it just seemed like a totally different kind of vibe in defense. I don't even, you know, really know the word for it, but just an overall vibe, like I said, for the defense. And I love the change, and I love the intensity that they're bringing to that side of the ball now. And, like you said, he had to go to work over the offseason because that's like a tip when you're saying, as a defensive coordinator, hearing people say your defense is soft, hearing people say that your defense is not the best in the league, obviously, that, you know, you want that side of the ball to be shut down, lights out. You know, you don't want that other side to get nothing. I know a lot, you know, playing defense as well. When I was in high school, defensive coordinators, they take pride in, you know, the defense being able to pitch shutouts and defense being able to limit the offense to 7 points, 14 points. So, you know, that really just – that carries a chip on your shoulder when your defense is not, or if there's rumors of your defense not being that good. So, you know, I think I'm hoping it's going to continue throughout the regular season as well.
But, you know, Jamel, that word cut also is in there probably somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
You don't want to be cut from the team because you didn't give it your all, you know.
Yeah, it's preseason.
Yeah. Our one last thing before we got about 5 minutes. Hey, man, Malik Willis, rookie quarterback for the Tennessee Titans. Now, they have Tannehill as their starter. But from what I saw, Willis looked like a second-year quarterback, man.
Oh, yeah. He looked like a savvy veteran out there. I mean,
he looked like a man, come on. And then what made it so bad that the head coach wanted to get on ESPN and all these other media outlets and talk about, well, you know, I didn't like this and that and the other. I understand that. He's a rookie. This is his first game. Come on, I understand. But the things that he was comfortable with, you should be comfortable with and strengthen the things that he's comfortable with. His weaknesses, that's everybody. Everybody came in the first game with a weakness. I don't care who it was. So, you know, I just didn't like his choice of words with him. And he was already, like 83rd player picked when he should have been one of the top quarterbacks.
Yeah, it really bothered me that he slid that far in the draft, that he dropped that far, because in the before the draft, the pre-draft, he was people were talking about him very highly, you know, and I watched his tape when he was at Liberty. People were talking about him very high. He was a very good player, He was a very good player. Yeah. And for him to slide that far, I personally think that he's better than, you know, first quarterback drafted Kenny Pickett, you know. That's nothing against him, but I think he's better than him, you know. And nothing against Desmond Ridder. I think he might be better than Desmond Ridder. He has the potential to be better, you know, than those guys. But he's right up there. And the fact that he did not get drafted even close to those guys, it makes, you know, it's just – kind of boils the blood a little bit. But, you know, as far as stats go, he threw for 11 passes, and he completed 6 of those passes with 107 yards and also rushed for 38 yards and a touchdown. So he really – and a touchdown. That's the part right there that you want to key in on, that touchdown. So in that touchdown, he actually dropped back the pass. He didn't see anybody open. He went through his first read, second read, third read. Once that clock ticks and the quarterback says, it's like, all right, it's time to go, he you know, pulled the ball down, ready to go, ran outside the pocket, and he dove into the end zone. It didn't even look like he was going to get to the end zone at first, but the effort he had to the tail end to just push it into the end zone and score, it really showed, you know, this guy is ready to play. This guy wants to be here, and he wants this starting spot. Nothing against Tannehill, but Tannehill, you know, he doesn't really have that play recognition that you're really looking for in a quarterback. When you're looking for a quarterback that when there's nothing open or there's nothing happening, they can make something out of nothing. I don't really think Tannehill has that look like that recognition that you really need. Malik Willis, I mean, in his first preseason game, it's just the first game, but you can see that he has that and he knows what to do in certain situations. Obviously, you know, as a rookie, there's going to be things that he has to work on. You know, we saw that stuff that he has to work on in off-season training camp, but that's going to happen over time because it's just his first year. You know, it's his first preseason game. Literally, it's not even a regular season. It's his first preseason game. So
Right. Obviously, you know, he learned something from day one since he's been drafted. He learned. That's obvious because you can see it in his play.
Yeah.
I think Tannehill's on his way out. And from what you just said, Tannehill just doesn't have the athleticism that he has.
Yeah.
And with me personally, I look for athleticism and I look for smartness, you know, being smart with the football. And like you said, man, you don't want anybody doing a sitting duck, taking sacks, man. That just gets up under my skin to take a sack, man. If I have 5 blockers and you send 7, well, then, you know, you can't help it sometimes. You can't help it.
Yeah.
Because you're sending more. protection.
Yeah.
So, but at the same time, man, some people even get out of that, just throw it away. The ball will be put back to where it was instead of taking a 7-yard drop.
That's what
I wish Mr. Willis a lot of you know, luck, good luck for the year, and I hopefully he'll keep his head on straight. There was some HBCUers that did very well. The guy out of Fort Valley State was wide receiver for the Ravens. He had a good game also. There's one trying out for the Dallas Cowboys from FAMU. He was undrafted, but he's having a very good camp. Hopefully he'll make the 53-man roster. And those two right there just really stood out for right now. There's a linebacker from Jackson State that went to the University of Florida, transferred to Jackson State with the Detroit Lions. He's doing well. So, you know, you got a lot of HBCUers, and we're gonna let the listening audience, we're not going to let it go by. We're going to let the listening audience know. I think there's two games, am I correct, exhibition, and then they start play because of the 17-game schedule. So
that's three preseason games.
Yeah. So having said that, we're going to let our listening audience know how the HBCUers are doing, especially the rookies going into the season. I hope all of them make the team. I hope all of them, you know, do what is expected of them at their particular position.
Yeah. I'll prove why there should be more in the league.
Exactly. There should be more. But, you know, we're not going to get into that tonight, but, hey, it is what it is. Do you have anything else, Jamil? We're about to sign off and let our listening audience know that, if you don't mind, before we sign off, let our listening audience know once again how they can follow us.
Yeah, so right after the show, go ahead and head over to Instagram, Sports Talk Atlanta, Twitter at Sports Talk HTL1, and then Facebook, Sports Talk Atlanta. Go ahead and follow us, and, you know, we're going to be posting updates and everything about what's going on, even when we're not on the show.
We have a lot of things going on here at Sports Talk Atlanta that our listening audience, we want you to support us. We want you to subscribe whenever you see something that has Sports Talk Atlanta. Very soon, we're going to be making a lot of big changes, so we want everybody to keep up with Sports Talk Atlanta. Look at this, for myself and with Jamil and all of us here at Sports Talk Atlanta, I want to thank all of our listening audience. And if it's God's will, we'll be here next Tuesday night, which is Sports Talk Atlanta, the best sports show in America on a Tuesday night. This is Sports Talk Atlanta. We'll see you next week.